ready to get and stay fit? Welcome to Fit Positive Confident with Dr. Gordon, where the focus is on your whole person health, physical, mental, and spiritual. Because your health can be affected by so many factors, Dr. G covers a range of topics in this program, from eating healthy to world-shaping events. So relax and enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Fit Positive Confident. Today we have a special guest and a dear, dear, dear friend of mine, Dr. Richard Jensen, coming all the way from the hills of Tennessee.
Wow. So I'm still a special guest, huh?
The man and the legend.
Oh, brother. It just gets worse by the second. Okay. So what's the topic for today, Dr. Gordon Anik?
Well, this is what I'm thinking, Richard, is... By the way, Richard was a professor. He's now retired, I think. We can call you retired professor of ethics and philosophy. Mm-hmm. And you worked at a Christian university, and then you also worked at a state university, did you?
Yeah, UC Santa Barbara and Cal State San Bernardino.
Okay, so, and then you also have a passion for history and theology.
Yes, indeed.
Because ethics has a lot to do with, I guess, both.
Well, you know, interestingly, that's what people think. Mm-hmm. You've got the camp that thinks that ethics has to come from the Bible or the Quran or some other sacred text. And then you've got people that think that ethics just emerges out of some version of people's preferences or people's agreements. So, opinions vary on ethics.
And you believe that ethics emerges from...
Well, I wrote my dissertation on that, and that is a complex discussion.
And it sounds like you're very excited to talk about it.
Well, it's obviously something I care about a lot. The problem is that it takes many, many radio programs to do an even minimally responsible job of it.
Okay, so just give us a one-sentence answer.
Okay. So relativism is false in all of its forms. Some form of absolutism is the only viable approach to ethical theorizing. You have both secular and religious forms of absolutism, and they both have problems. But that ultimately, all things considered, I think that the best account ultimately is a not religious one, but a theistic one. I think that all of ethics ultimately emerges out of authority. And so...
out of belief in some kind of a superior being, creator, maybe.
No, I don't think it has anything to do with belief.
Okay.
I think there are objective facts of the matter, like objective facts of the universe.
Okay.
So I'll give you a quick example. So let's say that you're playing a baseball game.
Okay. Can you do a soccer example? I'm originally from Europe.
No, because soccer is a girls' game.
Okay.
No, there's no taking soccer seriously.
Okay, let's stick with baseball. I don't know why I even brought it up.
Well, okay, if we're going to get serious, let's go straight to football, which is the real game that ever was invented. So,
what about hockey? You're going to offend the whole Canada, man.
I have some respect for hockey. Yeah, well, okay. But yeah, pick any game. Okay. I don't care if it's checkers, you know, whatever. And you decide to start cheating. Well, now, most people are going to say that cheating is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but why? Why is cheating wrong?
It's not a fair play. You're wanting to win by not playing fair.
Who cares about that? It's all about winning.
Okay. But if you do that, you're a jerk.
But is it wrong to be a jerk?
Right. I see where you're going with this.
Yeah, so the problem is you have to give some context, and you have to, in that context, explain where is the wrongness? Where is the wrongness in cheating?
So just because you feel that that's wrong, most people will feel that that's wrong.
Yeah, but the fact you feel that way doesn't make it wrong.
Well, where does that feeling come from?
Well, see, that is a totally separate question, because now what you're asking is, how do we get in touch with the moral facts? Mm. See, if I look out and I see my green cup that I'm drinking out of, and I say, that cup is green, okay? And then you look at it and you say, yep, I agree, that cup is green. Well, does our agreement make it green?
You want to say no.
Well, no, I'm asking what you think.
Well,
is it our agreement that makes it green?
No, it's the chemical composition of the cup.
Ah, okay. So you think there's greenness in the cup somehow?
Yes, the green molecules, some hue, some atoms that are kind of, you know, giving out that
greenish
color.
Greenish atoms.
Right, greenish right. Atoms.
But
we're getting so real scientific here, Richard.
Oh, yeah, exactly. All right, but so now let's say that I'm looking at the cup under black light and you're looking at the cup under white light, and so you say it's green and I say, oh, I don't know, it's purple. Well, what about the cup has changed? All of its atoms are still the same.
Right. So the cup hasn't changed, but our perception has changed.
Right. And so all kinds of questions start emerging about, so everyone thinks they know what right and wrong is. Everyone has their own idea of what right and wrong is. And they will say, X is right and Y is wrong. And they will get super emotional about these claims because, after all, ethics matters, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our laws are supposed to be grounded in ethics. And so there ought to be a law against abortion. Abortion is wrong.
Right.
Capital punishment is wrong. No. A woman's rights to her own reproductive system, you violate that, and then you're really doing wrong.
Mm.
Okay, so now we've got two different sides of the exact same question, both claiming that they're in touch with some kind of objective reality about the wrongness of abortion or the wrongness of violating a woman's reproductive rights.
But you're saying everybody is looking at it through a different lens.
Right. Everyone is bringing their own perception to the thing. And so the question is there any rightness or wrongness in the acts themselves?
Now, a Christian, Jewish, or Muslim fundamentalist would probably line you up behind the wall and shoot you for what you're saying
exactly.
Here right now.
Or behead me or whatever.
Right. Because you're saying nobody's right or wrong, almost.
No, I'm not saying that. Not at all. I'm an absolutist. I'm an objectivist. As are, I will say, most ethicists.
So you're saying everybody's right?
What?
You're either saying that everybody's right or that everybody's wrong.
No, I'm not saying either of those. I'm saying that the idea that the rightness or wrongness is in the act, like the greenness is in the cup, that's the mistake.
Okay, but the Bible says.
Oh, who cares? Why should we care?
But you see what I'm saying? Somebody who is looking through that lens, for them everything is pretty much black and white.
Yeah, so the question is the Bible looking at an action through black light or white light? Because remember, the perception of the cup is going to change depending upon the light that you're looking at it under. Are you getting the point here?
Yeah, I think you're questioning the authority of the Bible.
Well, that is something I'm questioning, but that's a side point.
I'm just giving you a hard time. But yeah, no.
Yeah, I know.
Keep going. I'm following you.
Okay. The greenness is not in the cup.
The greenness is in our perception of the cup.
We perceive green. Okay. But there's a whole context.
So Let me say this. So under different conditions, that cup could acquire a different, or at least we would perceive it as being of a different color.
Right, right, exactly. Okay, so now at this point, I do sound like an ethical relativist, right? Because now I'm saying, well, such and such an act might usually be wrong, like the cup usually is going to be perceived as green because usually we're perceiving under white light and usually we're sharing that same white light context. So we're basically, I'll finish the thought when we're, I think we're about at a break.
Yes, we got to go take a little break and we'll be right back. Right, everybody, we're back in the studio. This Fit Positive Confident, a podcast and a radio show, whatever you want to call it. I don't care. It's out there on radio stations and out there on podcast platforms. My guest today, permanent kind of guest, Dr. Richard Jensen, philosopher and ethicist, and we are discussing today religion, but we kind of went off on this tangent of right and wrong ethics.
Yeah, ethics and crazy philosophy. And so far, I think about all I've accomplished is to fundamentally confuse
everybody,
anyone who might be listening. Because at the moment, it's sounding like I'm a relativist, because I'm saying that the greenness is not in the cup, and I'm saying the greenness is not in us.
Give a definition of a relativist.
So a relativist is somebody who says that the rightness or wrongness of an action varies by time, place, and circumstance.
So everything is relative.
Yes.
Is that the same as situational ethics?
Yeah, situational ethics is basically another word for relativism.
Okay. So it depends on the circumstances.
Most people are relativists. I mean, the vast majority of people, when polled, when quizzed, when really rigorously subjected to questioning about what they truly believe about right and wrong, turn out to be relativists. I mean, the vast majority, it's over 80%, just believe, look, right and wrong, there's no objective fact. It's like you look at the cup and you see green, you look at the cup and you see purple. Okay. It all varies.
Okay.
And so I'm saying that even though I've been questioning the objectivity of the green in the cup, what I'm also saying is, now that we've established this parallel with relativism and ethics, I'm going to say there's no correlation between the way color is perceived and the objective facts of ethics. The objective facts of ethics are what they are, completely apart from time, place, and circumstance. Now, immediately, I already know I've got 80% of people saying, that's ridiculous. Obviously, the ethical facts vary with time, place, and circumstance. Sometimes even murder could be right. It's usually not, but there are cases in which murdering somebody could be the right thing to do.
Well, I mean, right now what's going on in Israel and Gaza, I heard I have to bring it in, I know. You and I have had conversations about this. But, this is a simple, I heard one of those rabbis say and he's crazy, obviously, but he says it's okay to kill Palestinian kids because they're going to grow up to be our enemies. So he sees it as fine. Let's kill the babies, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I have no response to that. As you said, it's absolutely ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
That anyone would be that flagrant about just saying murder is okie dokie in this sort of circumstance. I find it horrific. I find everything that's going on over there horrific.
And by the way, there are a lot of...
There are no words.
There are millions of Jewish people who find it abhorrent too, you know, so it's not like... It's not like all Jews are all Palestinians or all Americans or all Russians, you know. I don't believe in that.
But even the it... You know, what's the it that they find abhorrent? I mean, I find things to abhor on both sides of this conflict.
Right.
So I don't think there's any white hats over there. I think there's lots of black hats. I don't think there's really any white hats.
But you are saying that ethics, when we say ethics, what do we mean? Do we mean right and wrong?
Yeah, so that's a very, very pressing question, because there's actually a division between right and wrong versus good and bad.
Okay.
And see, most people kind of think those are the same things.
Yes. Bless you.
Most people have this idea that you can figure out what's right and wrong by figuring out what's good and bad. And so this is getting to this question that we asked earlier about how do you perceive right and wrong? And so relativism emerges ultimately from a belief that you can derive right and wrong from good and bad.
Okay.
And so all we have to do is to look at what, for example, most people really, really don't like.
Mm.
I don't like you to smash my thumb with a hammer. Therefore, you smashing my thumb with a hammer makes that wrong.
Right.
And so most people don't like somebody smashing their thumb with a hammer.
But you're saying that...
Therefore, we all agree that smashing thumbs with hammers intentionally to cause pain is wrong.
Right. And I think generally everybody agrees with this statement.
Right, right, exactly. And so this is why various forms of relativism can appear to give a solid, intuitively compelling account of right and wrong, because it appears on the face of it that you can derive right and wrong from good and bad.
If something is bad, then it's wrong.
Exactly. But in point of fact, and again, this is a part of the whole story here that's very, very difficult to rigorously develop in just a radio program, but I'll just here appeal to authority.
This is not just any radio program.
I'm sorry, what?
This is not just any radio program.
Well, that's true.
This is a highly developed conversation here.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to cram a dissertation into a few minutes, unfortunately. And it's not just my dissertation. It's like millennia of very, very rigorous philosophical mm-hmm. thought on the nature of ethics. And so I'll say, I'm going to call it way over 90% of philosophical ethicists are absolutists of one form or another. I don't know personally of any relativists in philosophical ethics.
So give a good definition of absolutist or absolutism.
That the ethical facts are absolute and they do not change with time, place, and circumstance.
So there is no
is wrong,
no
it's
such
always wrong.
No such thing as situational
no
ethics.
Yep, it is the antithesis of it.
So if
it's
I'm
literally saying it does not matter what the situation is, if an act is murder, that act is wrong. Period. Always, everywhere, universally. And when I say universally, I mean throughout the entire universe.
But this has nothing to do with human-made laws. For example,
well,
you can't hide Jews because we want to kill them all, so you need to let us know where they are, and if you hide them in your basement, uh-huh. you're going to jail too.
Right.
Or to the
so
chamber.
So most people believe that, yeah, so part of relativism is that most people have this belief that if you look at the way laws have traditionally come down over the course of human history, you will find a lot of consistency among human laws. And that is because human laws have gotten in touch with, generally speaking, the goods and the bads. Mm. And so human laws have emerged to basically tell us what is right and wrong. And so you get this tripartite, like a three-legged stool that's all propping itself up to say, well, good gets you right, and right and wrong get you laws, and laws are in place to tell you what's good and bad in case you didn't know, and they also define right and wrong because laws emerge from right and wrong, and so there's this yeah, incestuous relationship going on here.
Okay, so yeah, I want to touch on that, but we have to take a little break, and then you can explain it some more. Right, in the studio, Dr. Richard Jensen, we are talking about ethics and religion. And right now...
Yeah, we haven't gotten far into religion yet.
We have not, sure. And we need to talk about the decline of religion in America. But how do you, you know, if we want to talk about it, we need to understand how people perceive good and bad, right and wrong.
Well, yeah. So part of the problem with the decline of religion in America is that religion has largely lost its air of moral relevancy. So people look at, for example, the exact same divorce rate in the church and outside the church, the exact same rate of child molestation inside the church, outside the church, the vast hypocrisy in the church, the litany goes on. So people indict the church for saying, if really you guys are paragons of morality, then why are you just like the rest of the world? You don't seem to have any more of a clue. And oh, by the way, what's with the stoning people because they broke the Sabbath? What's with keeping women in burqas? What's with, you know, and again, the litany goes on and on. And so everywhere you look within religion, you see tens of thousands of different sects, tens of thousands of different interpretations of the same supposedly sacred scriptures, tens of thousands of people hating each other because they disagree with them theologically, tens of thousands of different ways of killing other people because they disagree with them theologically. And in the end, it's just a giant cesspool of what? Immorality. And so the problem you face is, how does the church have any church, any religion, have any moral relevancy in today's society?
Where does the church come down on this conversation that we have just had about absolutism and relativism and ethics? I mean, when you look at, and I was going to ask you a two or three part question, like, for example, the writers of the Bible, were they absolutists or were they relativists when it came to ethics and right and wrong? And then the leaders of today's major religions, do all religions come down on this topic in a certain way?
Yeah, I think all major
religions. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but...
No, you are. And I think it leads to a really fundamental point. So there's a big divide between so-called Western religions and Eastern religions. And Eastern religions tend to be extremely relativistic and completely oppose the idea of absolute truths of any kind. But whereas Western religions are really foundationally absolutist by their nature. And so the minute that you're appealing to a sacred text, which is very different from what Eastern religions are claiming about their texts. So the sacred texts supposedly come from God. And so when you're saying God said, well, that's putting the ultimate stamp of authority on the thing you're saying and the way you're interpreting it. And so the whole problem with Western religions is that they conflate ethical absolutism with fundamentalism.
What does that mean?
So fundamentalism.
Can you explain that, how they conflate it?
Yeah. So fundamentalism is the idea, I'm right. I know I'm right. There's absolutely nothing you can say to me to convince me that I'm wrong. Moreover, because I'm right and you don't agree, I know you're wrong. And because you're wrong, you're not just wrong, you're morally wrong. And because you're morally wrong, you're a danger. You're a danger to me, you're a danger to society, and ultimately, and ... you must be exterminated. And so fundamentalism always leads to abuses of power, be it on a small scale or on an epic scale.
For example, a guy who goes out there and shoots an abortion doctor.
Right.
This is the example of what you're saying.
Exactly.
There is nothing to discuss. Inflation. You're wrong. This guy is a murderer.
You're wrong.
We got to kill him.
Great evil. The only way I can deal with this evil is to put you down. And I do that because you're so wrong.
Right.
And so, yeah, the fundamentalism, it takes a healthy, I believe, ethical absolutism and says, but now I'm sure. See, it's one thing to say, There are, and it can be demonstrated that there are objective, absolute ethical facts. That's one thing to say. That's one argument to make. And I believe that argument can be made.
Okay.
It's a totally other thing to say, and I know what they are.
Hmm.
You see the difference here?
Yes. The difference is very subtle.
I can demonstrate that there are ethical facts that transcend my perceptions, that transcend your perceptions, that are what they are. Even if there were none of us around, they would be what they are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a whole other thing to say, I know what those are. I know in detail what those are. And if you don't agree with me, then I've got to put you down.
So this whole thing takes a lot of deep thinking.
Yeah, it does.
Which we are not used to in the Western society either.
So, yeah, sadly. I mean, we used to be the paragons of it, and now we are just shoddy drive-by shooting thinkers. You know, it's just literally little quips and drive-by shooting comments, and that's the level of our thought today.
So this is appealing to a modern American mind, then, this fundamentalism.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think most people are fundamentalists. You can be a fundamentalist about religion. You can be a fundamentalist about politics. You can be a fundamentalist about science. You can be a fundamentalist about anything. And you know, we've talked about intellectual honesty quite a bit over the years on this show. And I will say that fundamentalism is the polar opposite of intellectual honesty, because intellectual honesty is the position of saying, this is the way it seems to me right now, and I have a strong position on this. I think I'm perceiving this correctly, but I could be wrong.
Hmm.
And not only could I be wrong, but I'm going to systematically keep seeking for evidence that I am wrong. Now, see, that's what nobody wants to do. Everyone wants to live in an echo chamber. Everyone wants to live in a comfort zone in which they're confident that they're right. They're more than confident. They know. They know that their perspective of the world is right. And so consequently, if you don't agree with them, you're either evil or insane. And either way, you've got to be put down.
So we have a need to confirm our own beliefs and biases. And,
oh, yeah.
And we do. But, you know, when I'm thinking about it, who can then do most damage to me? It's probably myself. You know what I'm saying? Because...
Well,
because I'm the one that is perpetuating this type of thinking in my head. I always need to confirm to myself that I am right, that what I believe is true, that my actions are good. So, yes, I do go into the echo chambers where others are confirming that for me, but I am the number one guy with the microphone speaking into my own head. And when I'm not willing to look for evidence that I could actually be wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's tremendously damaging. How damaging relative to other forms of damage? I mean, I don't know how to put that on a scale, but it certainly is tremendously damaging. It's damaging to the whole nation, for example. I mean, you look at the way civil discourse is just non-existent in this nation today. You basically have two sides, and both of them are talking like they're just chomping at the bit for civil war. How do we get to that place?
It's lazy thinking and arrogance and ego.
Yeah. Yeah. Fundamentalism. Exactly. So you got two sides that are both committed to their own fundamentalism. And neither side is willing to say, you know, I could be wrong. And not only could I be wrong, but I'm going to turn the chessboard and I'm going to play as my opponent. I'm going to start looking at this whole scenario as my opponent does. I'm going to do the very best I can to immerse myself into my opponent's perspective and see what validity there is in that.
And then you have the new generation that's coming up. They're basically throwing away the whole chessboard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, okay, not interested, don't want to know, don't care. I'm going in a totally different direction at this point.
Well, yeah. So nihilism, if there's a fastest growing religion or fastest growing perspective in the U.S. today, it's nihilism. And this is this, whatever. There's no objectivity to anything. I do what I feel.
And this is why the religion is basically at this point disappearing, because the older generations are dying and the new generations are absolutely not interested. Zero interest.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Let's take a break and talk about this a little bit more. Welcome back, folks, in the studio today. Dr. Richard Jensen, we are talking about ethics and religion, fundamentalism, all of those good things. So, I mean,
except fundamentalism isn't a good thing.
To say that the future of religion in America is basically, there is no future for religion in America, is there?
That's a tough one to answer. I mean,
if we look at
religion, has an amazing resiliency because fundamentalism in human thought has an amazing resiliency. So I think this or that particular religion could find itself in deep trouble, or this or that sect within a religion could find itself in deep trouble. And by trouble, I mean it's just in decline, ultimately goes away. I can think of several denominations that were huge, just like mega churches in the 1800s that have basically ceased to exist today.
Right.
So there definitely is a decline cycle in denominations, but we're seeing a general decline in genuine religiosity in the United States today. The fastest growing sector is the sector that says, well, I'm spiritual, but not religious. Like, they have a vague sense that there's something more to the universe than the story that science is telling. And science finds this appalling, because science is tremendously fundamentalist. Science knows. And so science is literally going to tell you, and it can be summed up as Richard Dawkins does about evolutionary theory, that, you know, if at this point you don't believe in the scientific evidence for evolutionary theory, you know, then you're either ignorant, stupid, or wicked. Okay, come on. That is arrogance. That is fundamentalism.
Right, right.
We ought to be decrying fundamentalism every single time it raises its ugly head. And science is every bit as fundamentalist as the worst form of religiosity. So the problem is, there is no intellectual honesty. There is no people sitting around saying, yeah, I don't know what to make of it all. At the moment, the best evidence, I think, is this. But, wow, I'm wide open to hearing other arguments. I'm not settled.
Yeah. I'm getting this impression, Richard, when I talk to the young people, that they will say, you know, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. But like you say, vaguely, the word vaguely spiritual, which to me indicates, and from my conversation with them, I can confirm that what they mean by vaguely spiritual, they mean I'm really not interested.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I believe there is something there, but I'm not interested to the point where I'm going to explore this and rigorously do research and all of that stuff, you know.
I'm not going to have it really affecting my lifestyle.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, maybe something is up there or whatever, you know, but, you know, I got other things to do with my life.
Right, right, exactly.
And this is just...
And so, you know, politics is the new religion. You know, let's face it. I mean, the churches are preaching politics. I mean, seriously, the churches don't preach the gospel anymore. I'm talking about Christian churches. They don't preach the gospel. Islam in the United States has been political from its inception in the United States.
Right, right.
It's all utterly political. Politics is the new religion.
And I think that's not going to last forever either.
No. None of this is going to last forever. I mean, you know, even the great nation of the United States is in serious decline. If you're talking about the borders that presently represent the United States, I think that's going to go on for the foreseeable future. if you're talking about the principles that actually comprise the United States, that got lost long ago. We're not living in anything that resembles the United States of America anymore. Obviously people are going to say, Jensen, that's an outlandish statement. See, you're just as much of a fundamentalist, blah, 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 right? Well, okay, but the huge difference is I'll say, that's how it seems to me. And I'm a student of the Constitution and the Founding Fathers, and I think I've got a better insight into this than most people do, and this is my impression. But I've read some really good articles that do cause me to say, you know, it's open to question. I think I understand what the founders were thinking, but man, that was hundreds of years ago.
So, right.
Yeah.
So it's evolving.
I'm not a fundamentalist about it, but I do think that the evidence is extremely strong that we have drifted so far from what the founders originally intended that we basically bear no resemblance at this point to the principles of the Constitution.
Well, when you talk about this whole religion thing, you know, it's totally different than what it was back then. I mean, United States was a very religious, I mean, deeply religious country back at one point.
Yes, yes. Even religion, religious to the point of a fundamentalism that goes far beyond what we see in religion today. Religion has basically been crushed and molded by society. And so the supposed Christianity of today is trying to resist the molding of society. Try to imagine lesbian rights in the church, gay rights in the church, trans rights in the church. Try to imagine that 100 years ago.
Right.
Absolutely not. You're getting no traction with that. Even the Catholic Church, you know, celibate Catholic Church, right? Whole huge swaths of the Catholic Church at this point are all about gay rights, trans rights. And I'm not making a value judgment about that per se.
Right.
I'm just saying that all has come into the church. It all has molded the church. It's molded people's perceptions. So most people are very much relativists.
Historically speaking, we are a totally different country.
Yeah, we are. I firmly believe that.
Well, we're about to run out of our time, but I would like to come back and talk more about relativism and absolutism in ethics and, you know, explain that a little bit more, because I get this perception sense that there are some good answers there for life.
Yeah, there are. This stuff's hard to tease out, and it's easy for us to go off on tangents like we did today. But
Well, like we always do.
Exactly, rambling.
But
good fun.
Richard, I'm glad you were here. Enjoy the state of your new home in the state of Tennessee. You guys already probably have good weather here in Colorado. We are still suffering with cold. Anyway, see you next week. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
Be sure to tune in next time for another unique perspective on your whole person health with your host, Dr. G. And don't forget to share the goodness with friends and family and visit our website at fitpositiveconfident.tv and follow Dr. G on Twitter at Dr. G Fitness. God bless and stay healthy.